This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, not teaching. Feels like in that space of no self, I feel like I'm talking to myself together with all of you. And it becomes like to speak like this for me, it's a little odd. I've become used to it now, but wasn't what I set out to do in any way. And this kind of talking, excuse me, in this environment, it's sort of like a vibratory portal between ordinary mind and this capital A awareness. So trying to share that. We were doing Kinhin, and I reflected on what had been said before these past few days, that, and the reason that I took the opportunity and sort of the risk of saying, this is what happened, this is the view, this is the state of mind that the ancients were talking about. I have to find it. I think it's back in my room, but maybe tomorrow at tea, that I came across something that lays out the how do you know where you're at? You asked that. So in light of that, you know, what I'm talking about is just the beginning. Really. And I wanted to read something from, and at the same time, it's all complete. It's just a matter of like how aware we are of the expanse, so to speak. But this, we've been talking about Dzogchen and Zen, and I want to clarify that, to my observation, they're very much like brother and sister or something like that. And I don't know the extent of all of that, if that's true or not. I mean, there's other people who have studied it more deeply and could really speak to that. But for me, it resonates, having been with Koban, the only teacher I had. So when I read this stuff and the things I've been talking about, I mean, it's definitely how Koban resonated. So it's not far afield or anything like that. And I find these Dzogchen Tantras inform Zen. It kind of lights it up for me. And the Dzogchen directly lights up energy off the contained in the words. But I want to read this. It uses the word Dzogchen, which you could sort of set aside because it's not so important. And this is from the Dalai Lama. In Dzogchen, while thoughts are active, Rigpa permeates them all, so that even at the very moment when powerful thoughts like attachment and aversion are arising, there remains a pervasive quality of clear light Rigpa. In Dzogchen, since the clear light's natural way of being is like the sun and its rays, inseparable, if you are able through this to bring out the radiance of genuine mind, you will be able to maintain the experience of clear light in meditation without it fluctuating or coming and going. Longchenpa speaks of self-arising wisdom, which is in fact Rigpa. Self-arising wisdom is Rigpa that is empty, clear, and free from all elaboration, like an immaculate sphere of crystal. Its very being is such that it never explores objects of the senses. This self-arising wisdom is Rigpa, which in essence is primordially pure. Longchenpa describes it as empty and clear. To call it empty is to refer to its essence, primordially pure. To call it clear is to speak of its nature, spontaneously present. As such, it is free from all elaboration and free from elaborations of adventitious phenomenon. So it is like a flawless crystal sphere, and truly its very being is such that it never explores objects of the senses. That's the mind we develop in Zazen, I believe. The other thing I think to look for in teachings, when you read something or listening to something, is to find not necessarily what appeals to you, but something that stops your mind, your small M mind, or brings your mind to harmony, and teachings that open up an entry point, and that bring you to letting go of concepts. I think it's a big hindrance entering into this, because we have some idea of where we're, like we have a vision of where we're going, and that gets in the way. And I don't know how it is for you. It's to just be completely open to moment appearing. So sometimes that moment is, the Dalai Lama described Rigpa, it's like that clear, spontaneous space. But other times it's something hurtling at you, that's out of your control, and you don't know what to do. But with developing this kind of seat that I was mentioning, I don't know exactly what the word for it is, but it's this uncontrived, open, spacious mind that doesn't move. And so when you just as things appear in it, you have the opportunity to greet them. There was There's a guy on in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Central Avenue. It's where everything happens. And my wife and I were sitting having breakfast with our 1-year-old grandson, and this homeless, crazy person, we would call him, was going down the side of the window, like, and creeping along, and you'd see people go, ooh. And he came along our table, and he's looking at me, and I look at him, and I'm like, and he was back and stood up and walked on down the street. That's what I was saying about Coben, talking this fellow into going off his medication, because it's just mind, Coben is saying. And so there's different kinds of mind and different states of mind. Coben left, of course, but it really opened up the whole scene, like how to deal with that and how to really meet it with the qualities of, that are compassion and clarity and welcoming. And how do you meet all these things, even things that aren't pleasant? I have another story. I grew up in an all black neighborhood and East Palo Alto. It's different now, but I was out working on my mom's house. I guess I'd moved to New Mexico, and I came back and was helping her finish up this remodel. Her boyfriend had started, he got sick, so he couldn't do it. And I came in to help finish it up. And Barbara and I were getting ready to leave, and I'm at the gas station just before you hop on the freeway, and checking the tires, filling the gas, and I'm down doing the tires, and I see these, well, in those days, they were purple velvet shoes, and I look up, and this dude dressed, I mean, black guy in what I call a pimp suit, and he's got a gas can. He goes, "Hey man, you got like $5 for some gas?" And I just stand up and say, "Man, I grew up here. You know how many times I've heard this rap?" "Oh man!" And he walks away. And Barbara's sitting there going, "Oh shit, we're gonna," But I mean, it's just like to deal with that stuff directly is how this sitting can translate off into, it's not into the world, it's just moving in space. And these things appear because it's just these wisps that keep coming up. And how to have a not it to remain fluid in that, but not lose your confidence in what's uncovered in this mind state. I think it's really important to, I'm not describing it quite as well as I would like, but I think it's really important to watch moving out of the zendo, just here to the kitchen, dining hall even, and continue to pay attention. Don't ever stop paying attention. Don't stop being aware, say, because, like I said, one of the last things Coben said to me was ceaseless practice. He was kind of ruminating on it, and he didn't elaborate. And then he died months later, so I didn't get a chance to ask him more about it from his perspective, but it again, let this kind of echo. And that's what I've come to, is that it just is ceaseless practice. You just don't let up. You don't like sit and then go, "Ooh, glad that's over with, and I'm going to go on with my life," and then come back and sit some more. It's constant. That makes sense. And then there's this kind of ties into it. Kind of in the middle of something, but all-consuming thought patterns cannot be abandoned by being renounced, for they are the dynamic energy of awareness. Their true nature is such that there are no distinctions, nothing to differentiate or exclude, so that nature is not ensured by achievement but arises as basic space. Without rejecting samsara, you perceive it to be naturally occurring timeless awareness. Through the pure yoga of the dynamic, wait, this. Through the pure yoga of the dynamic energy of the vast expanse of being. That's ceaseless practice. I'm going to read a little more out of this. In the timeless unity of sensory appearances in mind, the naturally settled state that is the true nature of phenomenon, meditative absorption is experienced as an unwavering, ongoing flow. Thus, the Vajra pinnacle, the most excellent enlightened mind of Samanta Bahadra, is the most sublime, spacious state equal to space. The most sublime meditation of all involves no differentiation or exclusion. It is spontaneously present as the superb, timelessly infinite monarch. The ongoing flow of utter lucidity, timeless and omnipresent, is spontaneously present within this context in which nothing is discarded or adopted. And so it is the most sublime enlightened intent, the basic space of phenomenon, the nature of samsara and nirvana. This vast expanse, unwavering, indescribable, and equal to space, is timelessly and innately present to all in all beings. It is the ordinary confused mind that perceives sensory appearances to be something other than oneself. It is the ordinary confused mind that believes in meditation and making an effort. The true nature of confusion is the realm of equalness, the natural state of rest, the natural expanse that is unwavering and primordially pure. There is nothing to do and no effort to make. Whether or not you are resting is irrelevant. That is in the same vein of this ceaseless practice. It's just waking up to what initially is, one would perceive from our conditioned state, that it's outside yourself, but you come to recognize it as beyond what you are. Any questions?
We're going out. I'm going.
Yeah, that was written by, I don't remember who. No, this was something from yesterday. Here it is. Can't remember this. I think it was one of the Trump or the Chase students. But I'll reread that section because it'll help other people that didn't hear it. Well, yeah. It's talking about mental concept of a practice. He says, let's look at a typical practice session and how it's possible to relax through shamatha and create the illusion of Rigpa, we call it, or this aware, luminous mind. And how that becomes a concept in and of itself, and you're actually having the feeling and experience of settling down. It's still conceptual, and he's saying, that's the comfy trap. He says that entire experience is just more mental content appearing in our actual natural state. So he says to come to the actual resting place as the natural state or Buddha mind, it's as though consciousness takes one further step behind the witnessing eye. I, like ego I, that is engaged in observing as thoughts come and go. If successful, the I, as the observing awareness, disappears completely. The seeker is this illusory egoic witness or observer that disappears. So, like if you're sitting or walking and the awareness, that's why I say capital A awareness, because it's not cognition, it's not using the senses to observe and experience. It's outside of that. To some degree, I think it's Gogen's or his teacher, using phrase of body and mind drop off, is what this is referring to. Because up to that point, there's a kind of, you're here in the room and my butt hurts from sitting so long, whatever it is, or just being settled, quiet. Breathing is still and becoming permeable, but all of that is what's called the comfy trap, because actually you have to go bigger to know self. Capital A awareness now is, which don't conceptualize that, but true awareness. All these teachings, like if you read, there's a really well-known one called The Supreme Source, and it's in the introduction, I forget who gives it, Namkhon Norbu, but it the whole thing is phrased in I, the Supreme Source, but As it's explained, that eye is not what this eye like. Well, I, you know, it's the eye of God, so to speak. God speaking, put it in Western terms. Absolute awareness speaking to you. Well, it goes to this. What's your name? Michael, right? Okay. So Michael was saying, you know, well, how do you know you have some experience? How do you know where you are on the path? I guess I could paraphrase it something. Or what's the extent of the path? Where does it take you? What's the end? Is there an end of it? And so the comfy trap, you're just static in terms of some place on the path, not developing more. Confusing, right? It's that it isn't. It's just like being in an eddy river. And so, you know, people can stay there. It isn't necessary to move out of that. But there's more. Name. Don't think it was winning, but I understand. Shoot.
Butterfly. So. A lot. Doesn't matter. What quality is it? All.
Well, yeah. This is the issue with talking about this at all. Because there is what Andy was referring to and describing is the also has its own trap, by the way. No, seriously, because all. When you start looking at like all states of mind appear in the bigger mind, we have to be careful there too to not be trapped by, oh, well, because it can be like, oh, everything's okay, kind of, but sometimes the things I was talking with something about. It's okay to set boundaries sometimes because there's, or to shake things up, like I was describing Coven fracking people's egos in various ways. It's dynamic. It's a dynamic practice, really. Somebody said, one of Tim McMasters that I mentioned before, the well-practiced Vajrayana student, he said, Koban Zen has Vajra in it. And I don't know about other Zen, but he certainly did. And it's, I don't, we can take this comfy trap and apply it in different places, or we can just discard it. But I think what he's talking about in part is mental constructs being like, you're practicing along, you're literally practicing something, and you get to a point you're like, hey, I think I got it, I'm comfortable with this now, and that's the trap.
On. Got it. Got it.
Damn it.
It. Thought I would ask you something. Other ways. There's also a rising of them. That remember a couple places in time. Five.
Oh. I had some instructions from him. Not so much about getting up. I do remember I had a pretty high metabolism in those days back in the late 80s. And so doing, the instruction was to go with your breath, but inhalation, exhalation matched steps. And one time he told me, "You're going too fast." And I protested, "But I'm doing it with my breath." He said, "Well, slow down." And so the other thing he said is if you look at people doing Kinhin, and there's a fence like that, that it looks like this. It isn't, it's completely smooth. So when you, I don't know if I can do it with my hands. I can't. But it's constant, steady motion forward. I'll show you this. The other thing is, it's usually behind your things. But this mudra, this is like Vajra fist, conviction, your vows and intention. And then this is like the feminine part, soft. And there's some pressure here. And you're not like this. It's sitting posture. And you don't let it droop. It's here at your solar plexus. And then when you and your he said like tennis balls under your arms. So, and feet, if I may say, your feet are too close together from my observation. But shoulder width apart, it's a half step, toe to arch. And so when you inhale, when your heel comes down, you're exhaling. And in that ma, that space between breaths, you're still moving forward. And then the next inhalation, like that, but it's here and it's off the big toe, like pushing slightly forward in between exhalation and the next inhalation, and then you inhale, set your foot down like that. And okay, about getting up, yes, it's coming to me, but if you're sitting, whatever you have to do with your clothes, and you still keeping your gaze. It's not like, what are we doing? You hear it from the bell, you know what to do. So three bells start zazen, two bells start kinhin, and then one bell ends kinhin, and everybody goes back to their seat. So if I'm sitting, three bells starts zazen, and if I hear one bell from over there, not from the inkin going around, I know that it's something other than kinhin. So if I'm sitting and I hear dong, dong, one, whatever, and without changing my gaze, and start kinhin here. Same posture like that. So you don't get up and go, oh, you know, and start condemning. No. No. No, you get up directly from your seat and start kinhin. That's what I mean. It's like the first movement. And that's how, if you practice getting up from your seat and going into kinhin, it's a good vehicle to study how, say, how to not move your mind. It's the beginning of ceaseless practice. How to not like stir up everything by getting up. Like, you can get up and start walking somewhere without starting a cascade of thoughts. And later, as you become familiar with this whole thing, the cascade of thoughts is not a problem. It isn't, it just like there's a cascade of thoughts. You just don't buy into it. I remember it. Oh, Barani, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a neighbor. Yeah. Yeah. Goal practice. Like, you know, like,
Oh.
Oh, interesting. I remember that now. I used to live in an apartment in Berkeley. Well, it was two flats, and we were in the upstairs flat. And the guy downstairs had decided to take singing lessons because he was going to be in an opera. Oh, like endlessly all day long. Fortunately, I wasn't there most of the time. That's funny. Well, yeah, and then actually, at the last session we had there, this guy came from this the inverse of that. It's like 5:30 in the morning. Steve's ringing the horn, and this guy comes up just like he's a neighbor, and I have insomnia. What is this clacking sound? Goes both ways, is what I'm What's that? I think so, yeah. But COVID and all that, he wasn't used to us. Yeah. Sent. Well, there's a bunch of them, but. Might have been the powwow, I think, that particular sound. Yeah. Well, and then we have a bell, like some of these metal bells, and we used to ring it to call people back. Be like, it was from a acetylene bottle, I think, originally. You hit that thing. Well, you could see the wave going off down the hill. And indeed, somebody came driving up to find the source of it. They're like, we can hear that like a away. Oh.
Or you'll have some people. My point of this. One.
Yeah.
Well, not. Not bad. Shape, and they're doing this whole.
She does. Eliminate it, yeah. Yeah. Totally. Well, and the other thing in the Shrine Room at on was it Pearl Street area, probably double the size of this, and people, you know, would just get up and go out and come back in. It wasn't scheduled the way ours is, so there was that kind of movement too. I mean, people were sitting, but then they'd get up and go to the bathroom and take a break, come back in. Couldn't quite hear all of that. what's reality? I mean, which reality are we talking about? Sorry. Oh. Well, I didn't have anything ticking like that, but in my environment, but I would say there was nothing ticking. In that absolute state, or there's no differentiation, and it I mean, if somebody came and, put something against your ear, your physical ear, maybe, I don't know. No, that, I don't know. I can't really say. Who knows? You don't. Not
God, that's harder.
Mom. Wow. I would say in that primordial light, like only that. No, nothing happening. And it isn't like me sitting here going, nothing's happening. It's that capital A awareness experience would be that there is nothing going on in the sense that there's no movement, there's no nothing arising and nothing dissipating. No life or death. As it says in the Heart Sutra. And also no extinction of it, because the body will die. But in that state, there is, I just saying it again, that there is nothing arising and nothing dissipating. It is just so. Rest. Thank you all for your input. It's great.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.